From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, in for Brian Mackey today. Coming up this hour, we'll talk about seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, as it's appropriately named. It affects an estimated 10 million Americans each year. Here in Illinois, it can feel especially cold and dark. We're going to talk with experts about how to know when there's more going on with our mood than just those winter blues and things we can do to help. But first, there are more than 700,000 veterans currently living in Illinois, and each with a unique story and experience from their service, and as they transition back to civilian life. On today's show, ahead of Veterans Day, we're going to speak with four of those veterans about why they served, the challenges they face, and misconceptions about veterans and their experiences. Joining us now is Ray Dukeson, an Iraqi War veteran and American Legion officer in Chicago. Ray, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Vietnam veteran Rick Odie, who's organizing a group of veterans to get together each week. Rick, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Wonderful. And Sarah Bala is with us. She served in the Marine Corps for 4 years and was stationed in California and Japan. She was born and raised in Illinois and is now a student at the University of Illinois. Sarah, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And also with us is Andrea Cowper. She retired in 2019 after a 30-year career in the U.S. Air Force. She's originally from Southern Illinois and is now a full-time student at the University of Illinois as well. Andrea, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we want you to join the conversation today as well. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at the 21st show. So let's jump right into some questions here. Andrea, we'll start with you. You enlisted when you were 17 and, like I mentioned, had that 30-year career in the Air Force. First of all, what inspired you to enlist when you were growing up in Southern Illinois?
Well, it was pretty much economic and for education. I grew up very in poverty. And I had a brother and sister that were 7 and 8 years younger than me. And so I needed a way to make money so I could sit at home, but also have a chance for an education. So the Air Force was the best alternative. So it was really to make money and have a way to put myself to college later.
And how did that shape your life? How did that decision shape your life?
Oh, wow.
That's a big one, right?
Yeah, that's a huge question because it, you know, joining the military at 17, I pretty much grew up in the military. So my professional life was shaped. My work ethic was shaped. My personal life was shaped. I mean, it was the best decision I've made because I felt like it opened up a whole world that I wouldn't have seen in Southern Illinois. I encountered people that I wouldn't have met. I have encountered experiences that I wouldn't have had that I think challenged me. And built me to be who I am today. So it's a huge question to answer. It's just so hard to answer it.
Well, you did a great job. We're going to go to Ray now. Ray, your service in the military was voluntary. Talk a little bit about why you chose to serve and at such a critical time in the U.S.
Well, it goes way back for me. My father was in the Vietnam War, and he went through ROTC and did a couple tours over there. And then when he came back, he missed his comrades, and he ended up joining the reserves. And so growing up, and I lost my father when I was a teenager, but growing up making decisions about what I was going to do, the military was always going to be an option for me. And I didn't think it was going to be my whole life. But so I got into the military through ROTC in college, and I took to it pretty quick. And then I got into the reserves afterwards because it was a period where even federal commissioned officers were being offered reserve commissions. But then when 9/11 cropped up, I was on individual ready reserve status. So I wasn't serving, and I volunteered for active duty. I went through some processes to find a way to go, and I ended up getting sent to Iraq. So, you know, for me, it was spread out over 20 years with a lot of peaks and valleys of activities, but it's always been something I want to do. It's part of my civic service. I consider it as essential as voting, or I worked in the census the past couple of censuses, not, you know, out of civic responsibility, feelings of civic responsibility. I do voter drives through my American Legion post, and it's just one component of lifetime civic service.
Sounds like it's just who you are as a person.
As it turns out.
All right, Sarah, we're going to go to you, who is probably the youngest on today's show and also a woman. You get some questions sometimes from folks wondering if it's, you know, if you show up at an event, if it's you or your grandfather or your father who's actually the veteran, and you have to say, nope, it was me. I'm the one who served. What's that like for you to have people sort of not overlook you, but the misconception that it's, you know, usually going to be men or even the age element there?
Well, when I first started getting those questions, I admit I was still brand new, so it was a little bit hurtful because I want people to know that, you know, I'm just as capable as anybody else in order and serving and everything. But now I just kind of laugh it off and, you know, just correct them tactfully. They're more than welcome to ask me questions about my service, and I'll be happy to answer them.
And what inspired you to choose that particular branch? What about the Marines called to you?
So initially I was thinking about joining the Navy, but when I went and talked to a recruiter, he just didn't really seem like he was interested in speaking with me. I turned around and went to a Marine recruiting office, and just level of professionalism, the pride of belonging, they were just willing to work with me no matter how much I didn't know about the Marine Corps. That really sold me on to joining that branch.
Excellent, excellent. And Ray, we're going to go to you now. Talk a little bit about some of those challenges that you experienced adjusting perhaps to civilian life after your service in the military.
I think the most difficult adjustment either comes when you come back from a deployment to some place where you're dealing with harsh conditions. That's always a change in culture, a change in your life. But then I think the biggest thing and the thing that people don't emphasize enough is that after you've had a long relationship with the military, when you get out, you are without a role. You lose a mission, you lose an identity that many people get very attached to, and in a very short time. I've seen people that signed up for a four-year tour, and by the time they got out, they were proud of their last promotion, and they'd been just focused on that world. And then they're left kind of, you know, spinning in space, wondering what they can do. And I haven't had those adjustment periods as much as other people have. I don't think not as seriously. But for about a year after I got back from Iraq, I was pretty different. I had my adrenaline and endorphin levels were elevated. I wanted to do something like be a smoke jumper as a next career. And then I found out I was too old for that. That was disappointing. So I really, you know, I got out with a lot of adventures under my belt, and that was hard. But also you walk around and you see people complaining about their pumpkin spice latte being a little too cold, and you just kind of wonder at people's dependence on their creature comforts. There's a lot of things going on, and you have new relationships with work and with time off and with relationships, and so there are a lot of things to adjust to.
And Rick, I definitely would love to hear you weigh in on this, because as we all know, Vietnam was a very tough, from what I read in the history books, was a very tough adjustment for folks coming home. So, Rick, could you let us in on a little bit about that? How was that transition coming home?
Well, I can. I enlisted in the Navy in 1968, spent most of 1970 on a destroyer in off the coast of Vietnam. Of course, my home port was San Diego. And so to fly home, I would have to go through San Francisco Airport. And back in the late 60s, early 70s, the whole Vietnam war and era was a hard time on our everyone in our country. And there were a lot of different issues and many different ways of looking at all those issues. And it was pretty brutal coming through airports. Some veterans were even encouraged to take their uniform off as quickly as they could to not be recognized. But as hard as that was to hear comments and be spit at, spit on, and those sorts of things, at the end of the day, it was really they had every right to do that as an American citizen, even though it was hard to take for those of us that took it. They had that right because of what we were doing over there to fight for freedom. So I don't encourage anyone burning a flag unless they do it the proper way to retire a flag. But if someone burns a flag, I don't like it. But at the same time, we live in a country that allows that to happen. You have the freedom to do that. Some countries, you wouldn't make it to the end of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain in for Brian Mackey today. We're having a conversation with four Illinois veterans, all with different experiences and backgrounds, and ahead of Veterans Day. We've been speaking with Andrea Cowper, who served 30 years in the Air Force, Rick Odie, a Vietnam veteran, Sarah Bala, who served 4 years in the Marine Corps, and Ray Dukeson, an Iraq War veteran and American Legion officer. Join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. And Rick, I want to go back to you. In response to that sort of lack of support that you felt, you've got a tradition that you do every Thursday. Tell us a little bit about that.
We do. I live in Tremont, Illinois. It's just a little farming community southeast of Peoria, about 15 miles. And my wife was a teacher aide at the grade school. She's been retired now 5 years, but she came home one day and said that the neatest thing happened, football. The guys on the football team showed up Friday morning, the morning of their game, and they fist bumped the kids as they came in. And I just thought, I wonder if I could get some knuckleheaded vets to do the same thing. So I reached out to some friends, and we've been doing it 5 years now. We go every Thursday morning about 7:30. And we fist bump the kids as they come into school, encourage them, and it's been great for the we're all Vietnam era vets. We do have one vet, Dean Neely, is a World War II vet. He'll be 97 on the 28th of this month, and he comes out every week. And so we have 18 of us on the list, and at any given week we usually have a dozen or 13. If somebody doesn't show up, we know they're probably either have a doctor's appointment or something like that. So
something has kept them from the meeting.
Right. We're all 70 or better.
So, Ray, I want to go to you. We just, heard Rick's experience with not feeling supported. When you came home, what was that like? Did you feel supported by citizens and neighbors?
Well, yes, but maybe there's a stranger asterisk on that, is that a lot of people didn't know I was gone. The nature of the Iraq War, so I left in 2003, I spent about a year just north of Baghdad, and people had a hard time wrapping their head around it. There are fewer veterans than there were in the past. I live in Chicago. It's a northern city. There's not a real family tradition of people serving as much as there is in cities or in areas in the South. So the strange thing for me was when I'm leaving, I told my next door neighbor, who is Iranian, she said, well, where are you going? It's like, I'm going to go to Iraq. And she said, oh, that's great. That's right next to, and I said, no, we're going to go occupy Iraq. And the word hadn't been used in the news. And so she said, no, you can't be occupying. That's not going to happen. It's like, I'm pretty sure I've got orders cut for a year. And when the army accountants pay for your pay for a year, you're going to be there. They're not going to cut that short. And then while I'm gone, I was back in a year, and some people just would see me on the street and say, hey, Ray, it doesn't even register. So it wasn't that, I served during a period where, yeah, I'm not getting spit on, I'm not getting food thrown at me. I had that experience in ROTC a little bit, but it was mostly performative. But in general, my service is honored and recognized, and I get the thank you for your service more often than I need to hear it. So that hasn't been the same kind of a problem, not even close. So as soon as I got home and I flew in from, I got in from O'Hare and I took the train downtown, I trotted over to a cafe on the street and in my uniform, and everybody was glad to see me. So that hasn't been the problem for my era for adjustment. It hasn't been not being accepted, even in a big northern liberal city like Chicago. I do just fine on that level.
Gotcha. Okay. We're going to continue this conversation after the break.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain in for Brian Mackey today. We're continuing our conversation ahead of Veterans Day with four Illinoisans who served. There's no one experience that is the same, and our guests today definitely reflect that. We've been speaking with Ray Dukeson, Iraq War veteran and American Legion officer in Chicago. We're also joined by a Vietnam veteran, Rick Odie, who's organizing a group of veterans to get together each week in Fremont, Illinois, which is southeast of Peoria. Also joining us, Sarah Bala. She served in the Marine Corps for 4 years and was stationed in California and Japan. She was born and raised in Illinois and now is a student at the University of Illinois. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us. And also Andrea. She retired in 2019 after a 30-year career in the Air Force and is now also a full-time student at Illinois. And we want to hear from you. Are you a veteran in Illinois? What was your experience transitioning back to civilian life? Join the conversation by giving us a call, 800-222-9455. All right, and we're just going to jump back in with you, Andrea. You say that you're kind of a unique case in that you're a full-time student now that you're retired, but why is that a unique experience among veterans?
Well, you know, the best thing about being in the Air Force, I'm sure the other services, is you're still allowed to get your college degree while you're in the military, while you're in service. But I'm one of those people, I feel like I'm better at focusing on one thing than two. So I just focused on my career for the 30 years and knowing that I had a 9/11 GI Bill that I would just get out. So there's quite a few that usually by the time they retire, they have their bachelor's and or master's, and I just didn't do it. I just refused to kind of go along with that. And I just decided that why not spend the first part of my retirement just being a full-time student.
Wow. And so what's that like going to school following retirement?
So it's got his good side and his bad side. The best part about it is after 15 years of managing and leading people, it's nice to not have to be responsible to anybody or for anyone but myself. So just knowing that I'm the one who has to get the homework done, I don't have to rely on anyone else to do it. That's awesome. But it's also kind of sad in the aspect that most people think I'm either the professor or somebody's mother come to check on the child.
A non-traditional student. I gotcha. Yeah. I gotcha.
it's been fun. And that's the kind of life the military makes you prepare for. They make you prepare to be the oddball because you do things that other people wouldn't do. So I'm kind of used to doing things that maybe are not traditionally what other people would have done.
And I hope your discipline, your training helps you meet those homework deadlines on time, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I will say this, that if I was an 18-year-old, my 18-year-old Andrea would have been a horrible student. Horrible.
So it's actually good. It worked out for you that you went later. Awesome.
Yes.
Okay. And Sarah, so your service just ended right as the pandemic started. So talk a little bit about that. Not only are you dealing with this huge transition, but now, you know, you're the world is shut down. So what was that like for you?
I would definitely say it was super lonely. I got out in May, and so driving back home, everything was shut down. So the roads were open and it was nice. But then I got home and it's like, okay, I'm home. What am I going to do now? Like, where's the structure? Who's going to tell me to do this? Who's going to make me go to this place, you know? But there was none of that. And so I was born at home. So it's like, I want to go out. Oh, you can't go out because, you know, everything's closed. Everything's restricted. So I just kind of got like, you know, super anxious, and I went through a period of depression. I started community college, but unfortunately with community college, all the classes were online. So I couldn't go into class. I couldn't meet new people. It kind of sucked. And, you know, transitioning here at University of Illinois, I have some classes in person, which is great because it makes me go out and be social and see people.
Did you feel like you had support? Did you feel supported during that transition? Or did you sort of just feel like, you know, this life ended and you got dumped into empty city streets and, you know, no life to come home to? Did you feel supported?
Yes and no. I mean, I would definitely say my family supported me. A lot of friends I made during the service, they supported me. But back home, I think the hardest thing is that the military changes you. And, you know, when you come back, you can't expect people to change. But the thing is, they didn't change and you're the one who changed. So it's just a very alien experience almost.
Interesting. So you leave and come back sort of, I wouldn't say a completely different person, but a different person. And then everyone you left at your hometown or wherever, they didn't change with you.
Exactly.
Is that kind of what you were saying there?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's just a weird thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. All right. So now we've got a call we're going to go to. Michael is on the line. Michael, go ahead.
Good morning. Yeah, I've been listening to this. And one of the things that I have noticed is I'm a 25-year veteran of the military. Retired just this last January, or July, I'm sorry. And one of the things that I've noticed is this feeling of apathy that the general American public has, and it's not their fault. In previous wars, one of your panel members is from the Vietnam era, you know, they displayed the numbers of the dead on the nightly news. That was something that was going on at that time. The current wars, you're not having those things. The coverage of the war is an afterthought. It's page 2, page 3, page 4 of a newspaper. It's not at the forefront. In the World War II era, they had people who were giving up coffee and sugar, and they had rations. The American public is not feeling the effects of the wars that we are being asked to go to. And so there is this apathy. And it's, like I say, it's not anybody's fault. It's just that the pain of war is being brunt solely by the soldiers and the airmen and the Marines and the sailors that are fighting it, and not the general public. So the general public has a very hard time relating to us in the fact that we see it and they don't.
Mike.
And that's my comment.
Thank you so much for your call. And also thank you for your service. Really appreciate you calling in with that perspective. Rick, let's go to you. How do you reflect on Veterans Day? You know, what is Veterans Day to you personally?
Well, my father was in World War II in the Navy. He was on the USS Hornet the day Jimmy Doolittle and Raiders took off to bomb Japan. And so I think of him every Veterans Day, and my father-in-law as well. He was in the Army in World War II. And I guess what really enlightens me is, or makes me feel good about Veterans Day, is how I can see how we have changed as a country since the time of the Vietnam era. It's great to see. And that's one of the big pluses of fist bumping the kids every week. Mrs. Becky Hansen is the principal, and she allows us in each week. Of course, we're outside fist bumping the kids when they come in. But 2 weeks ago, there was a little kindergarten girl that came to the door, and I put out my fist and bent over to give her a fist bump, and she walked up to me, and she fist bumped me, but she stood there and she slowly opened my hand and shook my hand and thanked me for my service.
That's really
incredible. So to the welcome home we got, all this is just huge. When a little kid does that to you, I researched that little girl a little bit. I didn't know her, but I know her parents, and her mother is a captain in the Air Guard here in Peoria, and her father is a master sergeant. They have both been deployed at different times to Afghanistan. In fact, one time they were both deployed at the same time. So they've sacrificed a lot for our country. And so when I realized who that little girl was, it all added up and made sense.
And let's talk about resources a little bit more. Andrea, I want to go to you. What resources do you need as a veteran? Do you, and are you receiving those?
I would say, yeah. I mean, this is going to sound really like crazy or different, but you know, I'm a Jesus loving freak. So all the resources that I need, I feel like I've gotten from through my faith. So being a veteran doesn't really, the resources that I get as a veteran, cause I do visit the VA every now and then, I get my shots and stuff there, but I don't think I really need it, but I am definitely not the, I would say I am the exception as opposed to the rest of the veterans. I feel like I don't have any physical issues or injuries. So, you know, then I don't know. It's really kind of odd, is I just feel like there's no resources I need, but it doesn't mean that the resources shouldn't be available for the vets who do.
Okay. All right. And Ray, I wanted to ask you, do you have any thoughts on the comments that our caller made as far as just the apathy of the public? Have you noticed that just from the time that you were active duty? Have you noticed that the public is sort of removed from war? What are
they can be largely excused for that, which I think not that I don't want to see some change, but you know, you do think back to World War II, where you know the joke goes that, you know, like every woman you were standing next to on the bus could tell you the difference between a destroyer and a frigate, because they had, you know, it permeated everyone's lives so much. Not only were they dealing with ration books and deprivations of their own, but they all had some skin in the game. They all had multiple friends and relatives and lovers and spouses in the war. And so people knew what was going on. They knew what the risks were, because they could count the casualties in their hometown. And now the military is relatively smaller, lighter, faster, and our experiences in war are more survivable than they used to be. So there's fewer visible wounds and more hidden wounds. And we take care of amputees even much better, and they live fuller lives. And so it is very much different than it used to be. The military experience is more and more rare, especially in, like I mentioned, in northern cities like ours, where you wouldn't know. I'm in the American Legion. Obviously, that's a big thing I do right now, help veterans take care of other veterans. And one of the problems that we've had with veteran service organizations like that is there are so few veterans compared to how many there used to be. I was just in New York over last weekend, and there's only two American Legion posts in all of Manhattan, you know, with a population of 1.6 million. And so the connections between veteran to veteran and from veterans within the community are becoming more and more tenuous and few. So that doesn't make things easy for somebody who's just coming back from a deployment in Syria, and you get off the plane and you're not in uniform and you're all by yourself and nobody recognizes you. So You know, there's probably some people who would have been comforted by having something thrown at them when they got off the plane, or getting, you know, like at least they're being seen. And not that my veteran experience or anyone's veteran experience makes them an exceptional human being automatically, but we're going through some changes. We're dealing with things just like everybody else. And there's fewer people who know what you've been through. There's fewer people who understand. The community doesn't, like I said, a lot of people in Chicago didn't even realize I was gone. They just thought I was, not going to the same bars for a while. it is a very different experience. Now, at my American Legion post, we revived a tradition from World War II that was founded in our neighborhood, where when someone goes on deployment, we take their hat and we hang it on a hook, and it's there for them to pick up when they get back.
Wow.
There was a bar in our neighborhood in World War II that had, basically hats to the rafters. And then the sad part was, at the end of the war, there were some hats that never came down. Wow. Nobody ever came back for them. But now in my post, how many hat racks do we have? We got 5 spots. We've only had 2 of them filled. We use it to remember the people who are overseas. We had a guy in Africa for 9 months, and we've had some people in ships at sea. But it is a rare experience to have a friend or family member in the military, or be one yourself. Fewer and fewer veterans. We did have a huge boost in the number of veterans, and therefore, eligible to be in the American Legion, from a 20-year war in Afghanistan and nearly as long in Iraq and other places in the Middle East. But why are people disconnected from military activity? It's not just, it's surgical strikes, it's special operations, it's ships at sea that don't get a lot of press. And it's fewer people from your community who've got skin in the game. So it's understandable. And I don't know how to fix it overnight. I try to keep the lives of veterans in the media, but it isn't necessarily, I understand how people aren't thinking about the wars overseas when it barely affects them.
Gotcha. Rick, I want to go back to you. You were moved about that little girl who shook your hand. And, what can we do? What can just regular, average, everyday people do to not only support you, but understand and be there for veterans? What's a quick tip that, we could do?
I'm encouraged by what our country is doing. Not that many years ago, we were sitting out on our front porch, and I could hear the football game going on just a few blocks away. And they were honoring Iraq veterans that were coming back. And that was pretty awesome to hear. It's an encouragement to me that our country is alive and well. We're supporting our veterans once again, and I don't know what else to say. Andrea, I had to agree with you. My faith gets me through. Sometimes I'd be curled up in a fetal position in the corner. So yeah.
I'd like to thank all of you, all of our veterans today, for your service and for joining us. Sarah, Ray, Rick, and Andrea, happy Veterans Day, and thank you so much for being on today's show with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you.